name is Marie Meckel, and I'm sitting here with James Afono. He is a clinical officer from Uganda, and I have the privilege of interviewing him and asking him some questions. So, James, first of all, thanks for talking to me. I appreciate it.
You're welcome.
Okay, first of all, what's the name of your profession in Uganda?
This middle-level cadre is called clinical officers.
Clinical officer, okay.
Yeah. Briefly, earlier on, we were being called medical assistants until 1996.
So you used to be called medical associates until
1996? Medical assistants.
Okay.
Yeah. Until 96, when a curriculum was reviewed, and they felt that they are no longer assistants, but they are officers.
So now it's
clinical officers.
It's a much better name.
Yeah.
I like that. Tell me about the history of the program and the development. You told me a little bit before, and I want everyone else to know about it.
This cadre here was developed out of necessity of service. It was started by the Christian missionaries, and this was way back in 1918 by a renowned doctor called Albert Cook at a missionary hospital called Mengo Hill Hospital. He was providing services to the community, but he was overwhelmed. He had his wife, Cook, who was a midwife, I think, or a nurse, and they were overwhelmed with the number of people. Then they felt they should train somebody to assist them treat the patients. And that's how it came to be. Medical is the doctor, then assistant is the one that is helping to treat the patients. So they worked on this for quite a long time until 1929, when the government developed interest. They saw that they were training these people on the job and they were doing very well. They were helping them to, first of all, to dress wounds, clean up patients, and give injections. And eventually, government developed interest and they felt they should open up an official training for them. And in 1929, there was a school of medical assistants opened at the current National Referral Hospital, Mulago.
Mulago?
Mulago Hospital.
Okay.
National Referral Hospital.
National Referral Hospital.
Yeah, okay. 1929.
And this is when the government recognizes this profession.
Yes.
Okay.
Now, Mulago Referral Hospital, or National Referral Hospital, introduced a medical school. And there was congestion. So they felt there was overcompetition for patients on training, medical students and then the medical assistants. So a decision was made and this school was transferred to a district hospital called Masaka.
So they transferred the medical students?
No, the medical assistants.
The medical assistants.
Were transferred to a district hospital.
Wow.
Yeah. But now, of course, it has been upgraded. It's now a regional hospital. So this training was there until around 1958, and it was turned into a nursing midwifery school.
Wow.
they introduced the nursing school and midwifery, and then they transferred the medical assistants to the eastern wing, because in the east they were training health assistants. So they thought the health assistants and medical assistants would rather have a common sharing of staff. So they pushed these people to 1958. They transferred them to the east, to Mbale School of Clinical Officers, where I was one day principal anyway.
Wow. And what's the name of the school?
School of Clinical Officers, Mbale. From there, they continued training clinical officers up to date. Now, they reviewed the curriculum in 1970. The actual curriculum that they started using properly to train clinical officers was a tangible one in 1972. It's when they developed a proper curriculum. 1972.
So in 1972, you developed a curriculum.
Yeah. Which was reviewed in 1995.
Okay.
And it changed their scope of practice and name, 1996.
And that's when they changed?
Yeah, because the 1972 curriculum was purely clinical. Now, from that upgrade, they included their public health in the curriculum.
Wow, okay.
Yeah. And that's why the graduate is called, the award is Clinical Medicine and Community Health. The 1972 was only awarding clinical medicine.
So you incorporated public health into your curriculum?
Yes. So that they are brought up as managers. Managers of health, managers of clinical work. I think briefly that's what I can say about the history of this CADA.
That's really interesting. What kind of education does one need to enter into the clinical associate program?
Entry requirements. We have a dual target.
Dual target?
Yeah.
Okay.
We have the direct entrant.
Mm-hmm.
And we've got extensors.
Okay, explain the direct and the extensors.
Direct entrants are those who have just left school.
Okay, which high is school. High school, okay.
Yeah. They matriculate, then they go for another 2 years. We call it the higher, OHSC, High School Certificate of Education.
Okay.
High School Certificate of Education. That's after matriculation.
Okay. So they go 2 additional years after high school, and then they go, and then what happens in the extensor?
Let me give more light on the ordinary level certificate. You must have 5 credits at matriculation.
Okay.
That must be in English language, mathematics, biology, chemistry and physics, or physical science or general science. They respect any of those two, one of the three. So you must have this mandatory English, mathematics and sciences, which could be biology, chemistry, or physics, or general science. Then the advanced level, at this high school certificate, they must have 2 principal passes, which must be biology, chemistry, physics, or mathematics. They must have at least 2 of them. That's the direct. And the age limit is 18 to 35 for the direct entrance. Extensors, age limit is 40.
Oh, nice.
40 years. And you must have had the BASIC here, the metric BASIC, and you must have done a related discipline.
Okay, a related discipline.
Yeah.
Okay, like what?
You must have been a nurse, you must have been an orthopedic officer, you must have been a diagnostic technician like a radiographer, you must have been at least health science related subject.
Okay.
You must have done that. If you're at diploma level, you join in second year. If you're at certificate level, you join at first year because of the basic sciences.
Okay.
So those are the 2 dual ways which we advocate that people who have got basic sciences, health related, should be allowed to pursue the course. Duration is 3 years. The maximum stay 5 years. You don't go beyond 5 years. The maximum stay of 5 years.
Tell me, what's the training like? Is it classroom based? Is it clinically based? Is it problem based learning as we do here in South Africa? Tell me about the program.
The first 3 months is purely class with demonstration room. Procedures, just demonstration. Then after the 3 months, these students are regulated and are exposed to clinical work at a rate or a ratio of first year, I think is 60 to 40, 60 theory, and 40 practical.
Well, explain what you mean. So do they go to hospitals and do they follow doctors around? Are they allowed to do their own?
When they finish the first 3 months, mm-hmm. they have been introduced to basic sciences. They have been taught procedures. Now they are posted. The first years go purely to do nursing procedures.
Okay.
In the wards. While the second years go for clinics. And by clinics, I mean areas where they are able to do clinical work. Like they are posted to the eye clinic. They are posted to the theater to assist in operations. They are posted to the pharmacy to assist in dispensing drugs. They assist the pharmacy technicians and pharmacists to dispense drugs. They are posted to clinics. There is the eye clinic, dental clinic. They go to the blood transfusion. They go to the theater for practical work. While the first years stay on the wards to assist the nurses with the bed making, dressing the wounds, and this other procedures which they can do, giving injections, especially in the outpatients department, and they grow. Third years are posted to wards to work together with the doctors on ward rounds, clinical teaching, and clerking patients. You find that on each ward, patients, students are allocated beds. Any patient admitted on that bed is entirely yours. You have to clerk
the patient.
Clerk the patient.
What is clerking?
Clerking is taking history,
okay,
physical examination, and the investigations, and recommend treatment.
Do they have backup by the doctor if they need help?
They have to present
these
patients to the doctors. And the doctors go through their notes, listen to them, and approve that this is actual diagnosis and treatment. So they work like apprentices.
Mm-hmm.
And of course, we have got, like I said, first year is 60 to 40. Second year is 80-20.
Wait, so the first year is 60 theory, 40 practical,
yeah.
Right? Okay. And the second year?
Second year is 80-20.
80-20, so it's 80 practical, 20, 80.
Oh, theory. No, it goes increasing.
20-80 then.
It's the other way around.
Yeah. So each year they're doing more practical and less theory.
Yes.
Okay.
And then the last year is 9-10. Okay. The third year is 9-10. And that 10 is for lectures. The lectures never cease throughout the year.
Okay.
They go to class from 8 to 9 o'clock. Then from 9 o'clock to lunchtime, they are out there in the woods. Then again, if it's 3 years, then in the afternoon, they go back to the woods. While the first years will only go early in the morning from 7 o'clock to 9, because that is when their procedures of wound dressing, injections in the morning, dispensing drugs. While the second years will go at 9 o'clock, this is when the clinics are opening. Then they stay there until lunchtime. In the afternoon, they are in class. So it is a good tabulation. You just have to say this category here. First years, very early in the morning, must go to the wards.
Okay.
And do the dam dusting, do the wound dressing, debridement, and all this. Then at 9, they come back to class. While the third years have finished the class at 9, they are going to the wards and the second years up to lunchtime. At lunchtime, second years go to class, third years go to the wards, first years go to class. So you make sure that you observe this. It's a very, very good system of work.
Wow.
Yeah.
Let's see. Yeah.
The lectures never end, except when we are sending them out to the community.
So you send them out to
the
community.
They have got at least 10 weeks of typical community attachment, Where they go, they learn environmental health, water and spring protection, sanitation, home visiting, and school health. Here, they totally stay out, no lectures. Especially in second year, a certain period block, they go and stay there and learn and get to know how a homestead, a standard homestead and housing should be, how a stable for animals should be away from home, peace, you know, utensils stand because it is a village, and then come to VIP latrine digging and construction. Then wells and springs protection. Very, very
wells important. And springs.
Yes,
okay.
To protect, to make it safe, to make safe water. And then school health. They have to go and visit schools and do health education of school children about how to avoid disease.
Wow, so it's a very all-encompassing
program.
Yes,
it is all comprehensive. And this is why there is a very big difference between the original curriculum of 1972 and the current curriculum from 95. Because there is public health, which includes even management. Because when these people qualify, they do both curative, preventive, and rehabilitative health services. So the curriculum is so comprehensive because the actual need why the clinical officers were trained is that there was shortage of doctors. And now to bridge up this gap, there should be somebody to really stand in. For us, we say the clinical officers work with or without a doctor.
Work with or without a doctor?
Without a doctor. Where there is no doctor.
Yep.
And if the doctor is there, they are a very good assistant, assisting tool. When the doctor is there, they work very well because they will always refer to him the difficult cases. And when the doctor is not there, they manage each and everything. And then where they find difficulties or complications, they refer to a higher level of management.
I was reading somewhere, it was a WHO report, that there's more clinical officers in Uganda than doctors. What do you think about this?
Well, it is a correct statement because we have got, officially, we have got three schools of government for the clinical officers. And there are several others private. So that at the end of every year, the output of clinical officers is relatively high. Now,
so there's seven, how many schools for clinical officers?
We have three government schools.
Three government schools, okay.
Yes, and we have, I think, other three.
Okay.
Which are private.
Private, okay.
And the output is from these schools here, from the three schools, is about... let me see, if we have 70 times 3, that is 200, okay, an average of 200 per year.
So you get 200 per year graduates.
Yeah, and then we may have about to, if this one's have 40, that's 120.
Tell me about the medical schools in Uganda. Do they produce the same amount? How many medical schools are there in Uganda?
Well, we have got Mbarara, we have got Gulu, we have got Makerere, and then there is the KPI, Kampala International University, that's the private. The government ones which produce medical officers is Mbarara, Makerere, and Gulu.
So three.
Three medical schools.
Okay.
But there are other private ones which are coming up.
Okay.
And some have just been established, they haven't produced yet.
Okay, so new, young.
Yeah, they are quite young, they haven't, they are just coming on board. If you total, how about a total of about 10 medical schools now?
But the other thing I've read is that Ugandan, I mean, that African doctors trained in Africa tend to leave the country. Do Ugandan doctors tend to leave the country once they get their degrees?
Quite a number leave, and they cause shortage.
Okay.
If all we trained in Uganda stayed, the gap would be small.
Mm-hmm.
But because of looking for greener pastures, the economy, discourages quite a number of them, and they are mainly living in the diaspora who are not staying at home.
Okay.
Yeah.
And how, so the students that go to the public schools, do they get a rural stipend and have to work in a certain area to pay it off? Like, how is the program done? How do students afford it? And is it expensive?
In the past, everybody was studying on bursary. But
everyone.
The population, everyone who was joining the clinical officer school was studying on government sponsorship. But the population has outrun the government resources. So they have opened up two windows. One window for government-sponsored students, and those are given on scholarly basis. If you excel at your matric and high school, you get very high points. They put a point and say, those who will get these symbols, this number will be given. If they say 100, they give about 40% to be on government sponsorship, and 60% private. Those ones pay for themselves.
Okay. Is it based on grades, or is it based on how rich or poor a family is?
No, it's based on grades.
Grades. Okay. So yeah. The best grades.
If you excel, then you qualify for government sponsorship. If you are mediocre and you are unfortunate, then you have to pay.
Is it affordable enough for people to still pay?
Yeah, people pay. They fight for it.
Oh, that's great.
They fight for it. In fact, getting even private sponsorship is difficult because they also now grade the best is the one who will be allowed to pay with the symbols.
So how many applications are you getting? I mean, I don't know if you know this, but how many applications do you get for a slot?
Thousands and thousands, and we take about two each year. If we take first years, if we take 300 only, and you may have a pool of 10,000.
So it's a very popular profession.
Very popular.
And it's well recognized, it's respected, it's
well
supported.
Well recognized, very well respected, because they do quite a very good job.
Like, where do they work when they're done? Can they work after they pay off their stipend? They work in hospitals, clinics. Tell me what they do.
A Uganda system has got grades or levels of health service delivery. The lowest down is health center 2, where they put a midwife and a nurse. The next level is health center 3, where the clinical officer is in charge.
Okay.
And this one is a sort of sub-county level. Then, with about 25,000 population. Then you come to health center 4. And here, we have even operating theater, minor theater for obstetrical emergencies. And this is where we put at least one medical officer to help for operations, major operations. Then we have got a district hospital, where clinical officers and doctors work. Then we have got regional hospitals. And in all these levels, except health center 2, a clinical officer begins working from health center 3 up to a regional hospital. They are not limited in their operation work.
Okay.
Because they are needed at all levels.
And they just apply for, are they appointed or do they apply for the job?
There are two systems. There is the decentralized system, which is managed by the districts.
Mm-hmm.
The districts advertise jobs and people apply for those jobs. Then there is what we call the central level. It's the one that manages referral regional hospitals. They also advertise and absorb the clinical officers, but mostly at the regional level, you get only senior clinical officers because it is a sort of specialized service that they need here.
Is a senior clinical officer somebody who's advanced in their career, or how do they determine who a senior clinical officer is?
There are two ways. There is a career path which gives a clinical officer to advance with seniority and experience. Then there is a career path which gives advance to a clinical officer by advancing in skills, reading. So there are also two ways. One, you can remain as a clinical officer, but you keep advancing in your career depending on experience. Because there is grade 1, grade 2, up to high level. Then the easiest to climb up is by reading. There are so many, there are over 18 courses post-basic for a clinical officer in Uganda. So you can stay on your desk and take your time, but it will take you a bit of time to grow through the career.
That's
Otherwise,
fair.
You can take another dual side, you can advance and go up.
Wow. So it seems, too, that it's really well established in Uganda, and the country's had a chance to really figure out a system to incorporate them and use them to their highest level.
Yeah.
What kind of autonomy does a clinical officer have in Uganda?
Well, in Uganda, the clinical officer enjoys a lot of autonomy. Immediately you graduate, you are supposed to register under the Allied Health Professionals Council, which was brought about by the clinical officers. It is called Allied Health Professionals Council.
Okay.
Earlier on, they were registering under the Medical Dental Council. That one was suffocating them until they had burst the ceiling and they formed their own council of allied health professionals. And they are free to operate, because what brought all this about was that a clinical officer could manage a health center for effectively without support of a doctor, which serves about between 25 to 40,000 population.
Wow.
And here, he is not allowed to operate a private clinic, which is this room big. Then they said, no, I think this is not realistic. Let us fight for our own rights. In government, we serve very big population. When one got the private sector, they say, no, you must have a doctor to register under. And they fought their war until it succeeded. Until you see today, clinical officers have their own health profession council where you register. They have a registrar. When you graduate, you go to register. And they allow you to go to practice. And you are free to practice either in government or in private. Which means after you have worked for 2 to 3 years after graduation,
mm-hmm.
you are free to open up a private surgery.
Wow.
And they work.
So after 2 to 3 years of practicing, you can open up a private surgery?
Yes, of your own.
Wow.
Under your own names.
Wow, that is a lot of autonomy.
Yeah, I wish I carried my certificate. I still pay for my annual practicing license to the Allied Health Professions Council.
Do you have to, so how does it work? Do you have a national certifying exam like we do in the United States? And do you have to do a certain amount of education hours each year?
Every year, you have to clock a certain amount of CPD hours.
Okay.
Before you are re-registered. If you do not clock those hours, then you are kicked off from the register.
Okay, and is there a national certifying exam?
Yeah, there is a national certifying exam, which you must pass. And you produce, of course, your credentials and every registration, no. They don't give, it is your graduation exams from your college,
mm-hmm.
which give you a graduation certificate, and you come and register with the Allied Health Profession Council. Then you must have what we call continuing medical education.
Okay.
from certified offering organs.
Okay.
Like here, you have CPD points.
Mm-hmm.
So you must attend those courses, and they categorize them. In this area, you must have these hours. In this area, ethics, you must have these hours. General knowledge, you must have these hours. You put them together, and I think you must have at least a total of about 100 hours.
Okay.
If you are below 100 hours,
they kick you out.
They kick you out.
And just in the United States, they're talking about every 10 years we have to recertify. Do you have anything like that?
Where
you
No, we don't have. Yeah.
What, if any, do you think, what problems does the profession have in Uganda? What kind of, is there any kind of issues that the clinical officers have run into?
Well, I think the profession, practically, what I can see is a limitation of surgical work.
Okay.
This one is that the clinical officer was not geared to carry out major operations like a cesarean section. And yet he is put to be in charge of Health Center 4, where it is expected to serve mothers with obstructed labor so that there's no time to, I mean, we don't waste time referring them to this hospital to a medical officer. And of recent, I think the government has started working on a curriculum to train clinical officers to carry out operations. Another challenge or difficulty that is there for clinical officers is a dual service of clinical work and management. You have to deal with administration of the health center. You have to order for drugs. You have to answer queries here and there. And you may find you are only two on station or you are alone. And it becomes an overload for the profession.
Okay.
They are trained fine, but I think there is an overload where I would perhaps think of getting an administrator to come and manage the administrative part, and the clinical officer deals mainly with clinical management.
Yeah, and that seems like a lot of work. So what do you want the world, the United States, to know about Uganda and clinical officers?
Is that Uganda was one of the pioneering countries in the world to begin training clinical officers, except that there was no documentation. And two, the clinical officers are a popular cadre and a pillar for health service delivery in primary healthcare setting. They are very, very handy. They can work in rural areas because their training is basically pro-rural.
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 Okay.
And in Uganda, 80% of the population lives in the rural areas, while only 20% lives in the cities. And since we have this one as a cadre, it is doing a pretty good job to help the rural areas in PHC healthcare delivery.
Wow, I agree. That sounds amazing.
Yeah.
James, thank you very much for your time, and I appreciate all the information you've given us.